Hi, and welcome to the AA Grapevine. I'm your volunteer reader, Shelley Miller. Today, I'll be reading from the March 2025 issue of the AA Grapevine. This is part three for the month. Let's get started. And our first story is called Welcome Home, Mary. A breakup with her girlfriend led to the woman who would help her learn the truth about her drinking. My higher power and my therapist gently guided me to an AA meeting in January of 1997. I was a mess. I had just gone through a breakup and was feeling very sorry for myself. My pride was smashed as my now former girlfriend had left me for her daughter's father, who was in prison. I was a working professional woman. What the heck was she thinking? Up to that point, we were both drinkly, mostly daily. I knew she had a drinking and drug problem. I lied to myself often, thinking that since she drank more than I did, that meant that I, of course, did not have a problem. I had grown up with older brothers who had problems with drugs and alcohol, and I had sworn that I would not be like them. I was sure I would be able to control my drinking. What I didn't mention was that when I was 17, I was caught with an open container of beer at the beach. I had to go before a judge who sentenced me to attend 4 AA meetings. While at my first meeting, I heard a story by my neighbor, which I found pretty entertaining. After the meeting, someone gave me some pamphlets. One said something like, "You may be an alcoholic if." I took that home and studied it, as I was not going to be like my brothers. For the next 22 years, I tried to structure my drinking in such a way that I could fool myself into believing I didn't have a problem. I didn't drink alone. If I couldn't find anyone to drink with, I would go to a bar. I would pretend that I was happy and celebrating something so I could tell myself that I was drinking for a good reason and not because I was lonely or depressed. Also, I didn't drink before 5 p.m., unless it was the weekend. You get the picture. That breakup with my girlfriend was enough to smash my ego, though. I called an old friend who was in AA now and working with alcoholics in a recovery center. She guided me back to the same therapist I'd seen many years before, who at that time had directed me to another 12-step program, which I had long since abandoned. The therapist gave me a choice. I needed to go to 3 12-step meetings before I saw her again. Only one of those could be an adult children of alcoholics meeting. So I went to an ACOA, an Al-Anon, and an AA beginners meeting. To my surprise, I knew I was home when I was in the AA meeting. It kind of felt like I was with my old friends in the bar. The big difference was that they had big smiles on their faces, and they told me to keep coming back. The following week, I saw my therapist and told her how I felt in the AA meeting. She handed me a booklet that I had filled out many years before. It was my first step that I really didn't remember ever filling out. She said, "Welcome home, Mary. We've been waiting for you." That was over 22 years ago, and I'm still happily at home. Signed, Mary H. in San Antonio, Texas. Our next story is about sponsorship, and it's entitled Men with the Men. What does a gay member with sex and trust issues do when it's time to get a sponsor? One man found a solution. I came to the rooms of AA, this time, with not only a drinking problem, but issues with drugs and sex as well. I grew up in the Midwest, gay and closeted until I left high school. I started drinking at 14 with the winos down by the river. I was then introduced to drugs and cruising. These things stalked me in the shadows like an after party. I survived quite well, being what some would call a functional alcoholic, but I was quite messy and uncontrollable. Years of this brought me to my knees, to a suicide attempt, a psychiatric ward, then to an inpatient treatment center. Their program had mandatory AA meetings, which we were driven to in a large van we lovingly called the Druggy Buggy. Another mandatory requirement was finding a sponsor. Now, AA suggested guidelines were very specific. Men sponsor men, women sponsor women, and the same went for getting phone numbers. In my mind, the LGBTQ community wasn't considered during the conception of these rules. I had a big concern. Finding a man to show me the steps, one whom I could confide in and work closely with. To me, this seemed reminiscent of a relationship, intimacy even. Being attracted to men, I never have been comfortable around them. I had not had a male friend since grade school. Having a male sponsor just wouldn't work, not for this alcoholic. I spoke to my counselor about my worries, and she suggested I just look for someone who I could relate to, someone who might have a similar story to mine. So that's what I did. One day after looking around, I heard my story. Someone who cussed, had an infectious laugh, and a happiness that I wanted. And this someone was a woman. Fortunately, my higher power gave me the strength, the boldness, if you will, to go up and ask her if she sponsored men. At first she said no, then I eagerly told her I bat for the other team. She paused for a minute, gave me a smile, and said yes, she would take me through the book. I was eager to do what she asked of me, and she was happy that I was willing. That was the beginning of a beautiful relationship, one fostered in trust. We worked as AA was meant for alcoholics to work, with no sexual tension between us, no possibility of a distraction or a 13th step. The wonderful progress I made during my first year of sobriety, I owe to AA, my female sponsor, and God. Members around me have noticed changes in me for the better. I'm sharing more and showing more confidence. They tell me progress, not perfection, and I'm grateful for that. Hopefully, as I progress through the steps and continue to incorporate the principles of AA into my life, my ability to create friendships with men will improve. Who knows? I may even switch to a male sponsor someday. Signed, Michael D. in Davenport, Iowa. And this next story is entitled, Finding My Place. With help from a friend, a lesbian in Missouri makes it to AA and to a group she calls home. Above all else, I'm an alcoholic. My upbringing doesn't matter. My social and economic standing don't matter. Neither does my race, religion, or sexual orientation. That said, I'm also a lesbian. When I first came into the rooms, I was facing the four horsemen of terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair on a daily basis. I was in trouble with the law and on the verge of losing my driver's license and my job as an outside sales rep. I was scared and knew I needed to change. No matter how many times I promised myself I would cut down, no matter how many times I tried to change from wine to vodka to whiskey to scotch to drink less, it never worked. I drank as much or more every time. The closest AA group to my house was only a mile away, and they had a phone number listed. Yes, listed in the phone book. I didn't know what to expect when I called. A gruff old man who answered a noon meeting listened to my tale of woe until he finally cut short my sad story to say, "Honey, a lot of us has had nudges from judges. We have a 7:30 meeting tonight. Do you need a ride?" I assured him I would be there. I called a woman I knew who had been in the program for decades, who lived about 50 miles away. For years, she had been encouraging me to do something about my drinking. She was really an amazing woman. Up to that point, I had never figured out how she could not drink, even though I offered her drinks every time she came to the house. She was in a full colonel in the Air Force and had run two tours of medical evacuation in Vietnam. She was very good to me and never preached or pushed me to meet these friends she always wanted to introduce me to. When I told her I was ready to go to AA, she offered to pick me up, probably so I wouldn't change my mind, for the 7:30 meeting that night. She made it so much easier to open that door for the first time. At the meeting, several women took me into a back room for a first step meeting, and my friend stayed in the main meeting room. There was no way I was going to let anyone at this group know of my sexual orientation, and for a couple of years, no one did, other than my sponsor. Finally, after being honest with myself and others, I brought my partner to an AA New Year's Eve party. It was amazing. Even the rough and tough old-timers were kind and welcoming to us both. At about 10 years sober, I moved across town, 20 miles from my home group. I thought I would keep going to meetings at my old group, but after driving all over the city each day for work, the last thing I wanted to do was add another 40 miles of city driving to my day. And as we know, this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It always wants me back. I figured one meeting a week would probably suffice. I could go either Saturday or Sunday if I felt like it. Then, like a slap across my head, a small voice in me said, "You better find a new home group." So that's what I did. My new home group is only a couple of miles away and offers my favorite 9 a.m. meeting along with one at 6 p.m. It's an old group whose members are mostly older men with long-term sobriety. It took them a bit to get used to me being a regular, but over the last 10 years they've accepted me and I'm not going away. One fellow, however, was quite rude, often making sexual comments, thinking he was being funny. And even though I pointed out we were not in the men's locker room, he persisted. Another fellow saw how uncomfortable I was becoming and finally said something to the guy, who calmed down a little. I had worked in sales in a traditional male industry for my entire career. I'd also spent much of my drinking years in bar rooms, so I knew how to handle obnoxious men. But this guy wouldn't let it go. After a few heated run-ins, and as time passed, he finally became curious, in a polite way, about my lifestyle, and we were able to have some decent conversations. Now everyone at my home group accepts me just as I am. They are very appreciative that I attend several meetings a week, especially when a new woman shows up and I'm there to welcome her. Several women have stayed and become members of our group, and luckily for me, they now sponsor other new women. For a while, I was about the only female sponsor available. There is a gay and lesbian group downtown in our city. I attend a few meetings there and it was okay. However, it's a long drive and the attendees there were mostly men. Before I retired, I attended noon meetings at this group fairly regularly. It was mostly attended by gay old-timers who made me feel welcome very early in my sobriety. But the group started to change and seemed to me what I call anything anonymous, and I stopped attending. Today, I don't feel a special need to be around other people like me. My AA group is filled with alcoholics and welcomes anyone and everyone with a desire to stop drinking. If another LGBTQ plus person visits our group, I make sure to let them know they are welcomed and we're here to support them. Come on in, join us. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Signed, PK in Kansas City, Missouri. This next story is entitled Going My Way. I grew up with no father, no sisters, and no brothers. My mother worked two jobs while taking care of her dad, who had suffered a bad stroke. We lived in a railroad town near the water where they shipped coal out of the area on big coal boats. The town had about 800 people, lots of sailors, 9 beer gardens. Everyone drank. As a young lad, I heard grown-ups say to not trust anyone who doesn't drink. I couldn't tell you when I had my first taste of beer because people always let us kids have a sip of their beers. But I do remember my first time getting really drunk. I was 12 and it was at my friend's keg party. I got so drunk and sick. They said I was the life of the party, but I don't remember. After that, I hung out with kids whose parents drank and had booze in their homes. At 14, I got part-time jobs cleaning bars in town. Because they all knew my mother, grandparents, and even my great-grandparents, they all trusted me to clean their bars. At 16, I quit school and went to work on a fruit farm, then got a job on the back of a garbage truck. I got guys who were 18 years old to buy me booze. I went from beer to wine, then to hard liquor. Watching my mom work two jobs really bothered me, so when I turned 17, I joined the Navy. The plan was to send mom money each month, so she didn't have to work so much and could help grandpa. I heard that nobody could out-party the Navy. After I got out of boot camp, I was drunk all the time. The money I sent home to mom got less and less until I stopped sending any at all. In January of 1976, the Navy told me I was an alcoholic and put me in a military rehab in Southern California. They made me go to AA meetings. We could go out on Friday and Saturday nights, but if we came back drunk, we could not go out the next week. So I went out every other week. That July, the Navy shipped me to the Buffalo VA hospital and processed me for discharge. They told me I would never get sober, and they were not going to spend more time trying to sober me up. The next few years, I held many jobs in many different states, but wherever I went, it was the same situation. I went through several relationships. I had a daughter in Rochester and two sons in Brooklyn. I just kept moving. I got a truck driver's license and worked at places where everyone drank. My favorite drink was always the hard stuff. I never felt like I belonged anywhere. I was so stubborn and close-minded. Booze had completely control of me. Nothing came before my booze. I was now living over some guy's garage with no heat in the winter. I couldn't see my children. New York State took my truck driver's license away for a year because they caught me drunk driving. So I started hitchhiking back and forth to my job at a construction site. I would eat alone with my lunchbox because no one wanted to be around me anymore. I would not give up my booze. I began to think that if there was an afterlife, it had to be better than this. I wanted to end it all, but I wanted it to look like an accident, so I made a plan. The day before I was going to put my plan in action, three guys came over to where I was living. One of them was an old best friend who I had not seen in a couple of years. They said they wanted to take me somewhere and promised it would be fun. Well, I thought that meant getting drunk. That's what we used to do. Instead, these guys took me to an AA meeting. When I walked in the door, I knew what it was. For a moment, I thought, no way do I want to join AA. But my old friend had almost 2 years sober now, and he drank just like I did. I thought maybe I could do this. So with sort of an open mind and a willing heart, I tried for once in my life not to be stubborn and listen. I can't remember what was said at that meeting that day, but I do remember exactly how I felt. I felt like I belonged to something. I felt part of a family. I got a home group, a sponsor, and did all kinds of service. But most of all, I stayed sober, pillow to pillow. I hitchhiked to work, came home, hitchhiked to AA meetings with my big book and my work lunchbox. I finally got my truck driver's license back, got a job at a public high school, and my life started getting better. I'm so grateful for my AA family. I'm getting a life I never dreamed of. I finally feel like I belong. Signed, Lunchbox Larry in Webster, New York. The name of this next story is 89 and Doing Fine. I grew up in a family of 15. My parents plus 7 boys and 6 girls. Our father was both verbally and physically abusive alcoholic. My mother lived in fear every day of her life. I began drinking at 18, even though I had seen how alcohol affected my father. Eventually, I married a man with an upbringing similar to mine, and we proceeded to raise a family of 4. Life was good until alcohol became a problem for both of us. We managed to look good on the outside, but on the inside there was nothing but chaos and dysfunction. I got a job as a barmaid and worked nights. Drinks were free for me, and many times my children had to help me to bed and clean up after me when I came home drunk and sick. People in my life were calling me a chronic alcoholic, so I decided to go to AA to prove them wrong and to learn how to drink like a lady. At the meeting, a very nice lady agreed to be my sponsor. She let me know that in AA we don't drink alcohol at all. We go to meetings regularly, we practice the steps, and we reach out to others. She took me to 4 meetings a day in the beginning, and when I complained, she said, "If you want what I have, do what I do." As time went by, I learned to love the AA way of life. I chose to do prison corrections service and did that for 14 years. Starting out, I wrote letters to the inmates, and later I visited the prison weekly. The inmates who got involved in AA in prison found God through the program. When they were released, they had tools to live sober and joyous lives. The joy I received by helping them was priceless. Through the attraction of the program, the grace of God, and the good people in AA, my husband also came into the fellowship. This program saved our marriage. My husband passed away with 26 years of sobriety. I've seen many miracles in my life, but the greatest one was when my son presented me with my 10-year medallion and stayed to become a member in good standing now for 36 years. At 89, I'm still active in my group and go to many meetings. I surely have been blessed by the hand of God, and for that I'm eternally grateful. And remember, if you want what I have, do what I do. Signed, Angie T. in Lincoln, Rhode Island. And this next story is entitled, A Love Affair with Alcohol. Her marriage or Long Island iced teas? She had to make a decision. Luckily, she chose AA. I came to my first AA meeting after much deliberation, especially after my husband sat me down and told me he couldn't go on like this. I came home at 2 a.m. I had planned to have 2 glasses of wine at happy hour with the girls from the real estate office where I worked, and then I'd go home and make dinner. But Long Island iced teas were on special for $1. I don't remember driving home, but I woke up the next morning and knew I was in big trouble. My husband asked me what happened. I had no idea. I told him that once I start drinking, I just never know what's going to happen. He said he was leaving me. I knew I had to do something to save my marriage. I drove around that night weighing my options, alcohol or my husband. Alcohol or my husband. I felt my husband was a nag, no fun. He was a great designated driver, but I was pretty sure there were plenty of fish in the sea and he could be replaced. But alcohol, that was different. I had a love affair with alcohol. I drank every day. How was I going to replace that? So I chose alcohol over my husband. But then, in a moment of clarity, I thought, wouldn't a normal person pick her husband? Was my brain broken? That's when I knew that something was really wrong with me. The very next day, I called AA Central Office in San Diego, and they sent me to a sober clubhouse on Cass Street. At my first AA meetings, the members went around the room, all saying their name and stating they were alcoholic. I didn't want to be rude, so when it came my turn, I said, I'm Deanna, and I'm an alcoholic. A gong went off in my body. It felt like the truest thing I had ever said. Suddenly, the gears in my mind all clicked into place. Wow, I suddenly understood why I dropped out of college and why I broke up with Mr. Wonderful and why I got arrested. I cried through the first meeting. A bunch of cackling AA hens asked me to join them for coffee downstairs. Since I had nowhere to go, I stayed and talked to them about the mess I was in. They told me there was another meeting in 30 minutes, so I stayed. After that second meeting, a lady named Pat invited me to the La Jolla speaker meeting at 8 that evening, and I went. It seemed like 300 people were there. Pat waved at me from a seat near the front when I arrived, just as she had promised. She saved me a seat next to her and her husband. I was surprised that she remembered me at all. I felt so welcomed I cried through that whole meeting too. Eventually, I found a home group and a weekly meeting schedule. I went through a few sponsors before I found Elsa, who made a huge difference in my life. She held 16-week step studies in her home for her sponsees and the ladies in our group. We worked the steps every 2 years, like it or not. She didn't make it optional. My husband toughed it out and eventually made the commitment to stay with me. We were married for 25 happy years, had twins in my 3rd year of sobriety, raised our children, filed for bankruptcy, bought a home, had careers, and traveled the country. After 20 years of marriage, he hit bottom and got sober in AA too. We stayed married again, and although eventually we divorced, we remained dear friends. Through it all, I didn't drink, went to meetings, sponsored women, and learned how to live life on life's terms. People died. I learned how to date in sobriety. My kids grew up, got married, and moved away, and my daughter and her husband left for Portugal. After suiting up and showing up at my job for 25 years, I retired. Now I play tennis and volunteer at our library and local literacy groups. I'm hoping to write a novel. When the COVID pandemic hit, I was blessed to be with a wonderful man who continues to make all my dreams come true. We built a greenhouse, remodeled the laundry room, got a wonderful white German shepherd, and have an amazing home that we both love. My dog makes it his job to keep me happy every day. I'm so lucky. I wake up smiling and enjoy life every day. My sponsor, Betsy, says I'm annoyingly positive. I'm now 32 years sober. AA has been the constant in my life. I've always gone to meetings and always had a home group. I'm so lucky that my home group, Women Empowering Women, which I helped to start in 2016, has continued to thrive. First virtually, then outside in rocking chairs at the church. We now meet in the fellowship hall while also still virtually. We had 4 newcomers join us recently, and I was so glad we were there meeting in person when they came to their first AA meeting. Twice a week, I arrive 15 minutes early to open the doors and set up the camera for the meeting. I hope I can continue to be as welcoming as the ladies who put their arms around me at my first AA meeting and told me, "Don't worry, sweetheart, everything's going to be fine. Just keep coming back, it works." They were right. AA works and has worked for all these years. I'm chairing my third 16-week step study workshop in 4 years, this one virtual, and in honor of Elsa, who passed away at age 82. I hope that a few of the 24 ladies who signed up will someday chair their own step study workshops. I consider it an honor and an obligation to pay it forward for this wonderful sober life I get to have. Signed, Deanna S. in Roswell, Georgia. And that's all the time we have for this edition of the AA Grapevine. You've been listening to the March 2025 edition. This has been part 3. Thank you for listening. My name is Shelley Miller, and I've been your volunteer reader. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.